Okay, I've pushed record. Tracy's here. Now we can really get started. So this week we're going to talk about Nauvoo. Where did it come from? Saints, what did they do while they're there? We're not going to talk a whole lot about the doctrinal innovations that happened during the Nauvoo period. We're going to spend the next few weeks talking about that. So as mentioned, we'll talk about redemption for the dead, where that idea came from, first times that Joseph Smith talked about it publicly, how the saints practiced that, and then eventually how they kind of had to put the lid on and say, Sally, stop getting baptized for your uncles.
No, for Bach and Beethoven.
Yeah.
Well, or that, too. But it's not until, you know, section 128, when kind of the fruition of that idea of salvation for the dead really comes to pass, and we understand it as we do today. So talk about that next week. The week after that, we'll talk about polygamy and polyandry and celestial marriage and spiritual wifery and all types of things. That'll be fun.
I have a cool question.
Sure.
Not about this stuff. When this class goes on until May?
We'll go to the last week in May. So once June hits, then I have to go out to Utah. So we'll go to the very end of May, last Thursday in May.
It's polyandry?
Polyandry is one wife, many husbands.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Fun one, right?
I've never heard of that in my whole life. Was that another little rope from polygamy, roped off the main track?
Yeah, so it would be where a woman would be, well,
come in 2 weeks. Concept,
and,
yeah,
come in 2 weeks, we'll tell you all about it. After that, we'll talk about the development of the temple endowment, where that comes. The ties a lot of people want to point to and say, look, Joseph just co-opted it from Freemasonry. There's something to that, but I don't think we can just say, oh, he's just lifting it the whole cloth. And anyway, so we'll talk about that, and then we'll talk about the martyrdom, and then we'll talk about the succession crisis after Joseph Smith dies. So that's about what we've been doing the last few weeks. You know, just easy stuff. Nothing too hard.
You don't need my questions.
Well. That's what we do, is try to answer your questions before you even know what to ask, right? Mm-hmm. So, Nauvoo has an interesting history. There's a picture of it there. Saints start to come to Nauvoo at November of 1838. Like we talked about last week, Joseph Smith, he goes in to Liberty Jail November 1838. However, there's some history we have to know before that. The first designation given to this area, that little peninsula that sticks out there to the Mississippi River.
Mississippi.
Sticks out there. At one time, it was referred to as Venus. Now, interesting thing. There were some land speculators. They go out. They start to found just some very ramshackle settlements there on the little peninsula. And some people, they decide to go over into the Iowa Territory, which was, by and large, Indian territory at the time. And they start to take to them these Indian wives. Now, big no-no, okay? A lot of the other settlers, they think, what are you doing? You can't mix races like that. That's totally inappropriate. And so it's kind of pejorative, but they give it this designation of Venus, because they have all these wild women and these white men out in this little settlement. And so it just gets termed Venus. Eventually, that whole experience kind of dissipates. It's renamed Commerce, Illinois, by some speculators that come in and just kind of co-opt the existing structures that those Venetians, I don't know what they call them, well, what those people had left behind, because they just left them there. And so, hey, great opportunity. We've got structures. It's there on a bend in the river. There's some rapids there, and so it's a place where people who were in canoes and not substantial boats would have to portage. They would have to take their things out of the river and walk this path. And so, hey, they'll have to walk right through our town. This is going to be a major commercial opportunity. And so they rename it into Commerce, Illinois. Really just the speculators trying to get other investors to invest in the area. It was just marketing, though. It really commercially never got much off the ground. Isaac Gallen, he starts to offer this land to Eastern land speculators, and he tells them, but look, nothing down, and you have 20 years to pay it back. Those are great mortgage terms.
Yes, they are.
So, but it doesn't work. Eventually, Joseph Smith, he's given an offer the following March, exactly how he got it, though, because he was still there in Liberty Jail. Anyway, we don't know exactly how it is, but Joseph and his brethren, they escape. They get out of Liberty Jail April 6th. They escape April 16th back to Nauvoo, and that's kind of where the whole thing takes off. Where April 30th, they officially purchase the land, and Joseph gives the call to gather. And so everybody comes to Commerce. They rename it Nauvoo, which is an anglicized version of a Hebrew word, which means beautiful, and that's that. Okay? Well, you tell me. I'm sure, Katie, you've been able to get to Nauvoo yet?
When I was 12, it was the sweatiest day I've ever seen.
I didn't enjoy my teenage Nauvoo experience very much. I mean, I just kept looking for, like, where's the food? There's nothing here.
There's no McDonald's.
My parents were going to let me eat ice cream before lunch? Last time Lindsay and I were there was this nice breakfast buffet place that was, it's okay.
The restaurant was really fine. That was the house that we went to. The one with the cellar that they took
from the I mean, as far as the touristy things, right. Yeah. But just, you know, teenage boy just wants food and entertainment, and he really has neither of those to offer, so. Anybody been there more recently? Where'd you go, Brittany?
We went while we were in Milwaukee.
Okay. That's pretty good. How many of us can trace some ancestry back to Nauvoo? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You're Canadians, really?
Oh yeah, tons of Mormons went out to Canada. You know,
that's what the Judds came from, was Canada.
Yeah, they got sent there by Brigham Young so they could keep practicing polygamy.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of us
here. Fantastic. Okay, so quite a few of us. That's exciting. I grabbed this picture because you can see this is still some of the swampland that is left over from Nauvoo. It's a marsh. I mean, why anybody moved to this little area and thought, hey, that's cool.
I'm land.
Swamp.
It's so pretty.
It can be so pretty though, but it was hard. Those first saints that show up. I don't really care about this too much. Talk about that. That first summer, I mean, it's awful. Awful, awful. In the journals, the people, they often talk about how they're getting the ague. It's malaria is what it is. They had so many funerals going on. They had limit funerals for Tuesdays and Thursdays. It was horrible. Horrible. Also, though, we owe a lot of Joseph Smith's sermons to these Tuesday and Thursday funerals. Because Joseph's opponents, they knew to look for him at church on Sunday, and so his sermons would often come at those funerals. Now, probably the most famous of those is the King Follett discourse. Have you heard of that one? Okay, King Follett was a man. His first name was King. When I asked, you know, why name him King, it was parents back in the day trying to give their children a leg up in life. If someone sees, oh, your name's King, that must mean something. But that was one of those sermons. Also, the funeral of Seymour Brunson, that's where we get the first discourse on baptisms for the dead. We'll talk about that next week. But Joseph, that's where he's preaching a lot of time. The families were often pre-fitted for their coffins. How do you have to do that for family home evening? Come on, kids.
Measure up.
Little Johnny's sick.
Yeah. It was hard. Last time Lindsay and I were there, we were fortunate to have Susan Easton Black Durant.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah, take us to the There are a few cemeteries there in Nauvoo, but we went to one of the early cemeteries where a lot of people from these first summer passed away. And there's a special feeling there. I mean, like Brittany said, there was some sacrifice. It was tough slugging. And so they start off with, you know, about 1,500 people initially that come to Nauvoo. Nauvoo, the growth, it's remarkable. In the space of about, from 1838 to 1845, we'll go from roughly 1,500 people to 13,000 people. It's incredible, okay? By the time the Saints leave, the population of Nauvoo is rivaling that of Chicago. Chicago's got 15,000. Nauvoo is just bumping up against 13,000. And now you go to Nauvoo? Not even close at all. Also, we have to make mention, in 1838, Joseph starts sending the apostles on some of the first missions that we know about. He sends Heber C. Kimball, Orson Hyde, John Goodson, John Snyder, and I can't remember the other guy. But they're the first missionaries that are sent over to England. Now, this would be tough. Joseph has just experienced the dissolution of Kirtland. The Kirtland Safety Society has failed. A lot of people are questioning Joseph's judgment. We made mention of this a couple of weeks ago, but there were actually people that came to the Kirtland Temple with Bowie knives and pistols and tried to throw Joseph Smith out of the temple and replace him. David Whitmer was the one that wanted to take Joseph's spot. And Joseph takes his best friends and he's sending them off on missions. Aaron, question?
How old he is during each of these.
Oh, sure.
About what age is he during the Nauvoo period?
You're going to make me do math.
Sorry. It's just, I think it helps because somebody made a comment on Sunday because we were talking about Joseph Smith in the history about how young he was and how innocent and in his very early years and how, you know, he was growing and in the gospel. So I think for me, like, kind of understanding how old he is when things are happening is so helpful.
That's a very good point. Thanks for bringing that up. So Liberty Jail. Nauvoo-ish. He's 33 at this point.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll just leave 1805 up there.
Yeah,
and
that will help.
Do our math from there. Yeah. No, I forgot what I was talking about.
Sorry.
No, that's fine, Aaron.
Sending missionaries to
England. Alright, sending missionaries off to England. So, Heber C. Kimball, by his own admission, he does not feel very comfortable speaking publicly. In fact, he goes to Joseph and he says, Joseph, it'd be a much better idea. Why don't you send Brigham? I mean, Brigham's Brigham. He has no problem talking to anybody. I'm not educated, I don't write, I can't speak well. Send Brigham. Joseph's response, no, I need Brigham here. Which was quite prophetic because of not short thereafter, Joseph Smith and many of the church leaders are incarcerated in Liberty Jail. Brigham Young is not. And he's the one that guides the saints from Far West to Quincy, Illinois, across the river, eventually, over to Nauvoo. Brigham, I mean, he's been kind of pulling the saints around for a long time. That just seems to be his calling. But let's focus on Heber C. Kimball for a minute. They get over to England, and on the evening of the baptism of the first eight people in England, they have quite a harrowing experience. Have we talked about this demonic vision? I forget what I tell which group. Yes, we did. No, we haven't.
No,
okay.
It's worth repeating.
Some people say yes, some people say well. We'll go with it just so everybody's on the same page. John Snyder, in his journal, he recalled that he felt like he was often accosted by hell. That devils would come after him. He was often morose, depressed. Now, if we're ever that way, that doesn't mean that the demons are tugging on our coattails. But that's how he interpreted it. And so that was the night of August 7th, because the first baptisms were August 8th. The story recorded in Heber C. Kimball's biography says that John Goodson, that he went from the first floor of the flat where they were living up to the second floor where Elders Hyde and Kimball in order to ask the apostles for a blessing. He goes up there saying, I just feel that something is coming over me. What should I do? And so Elder Hyde lays his hands on him, and when he lays his hands on this man, by his account, he was thrown back, physically accosted in some way, where he was thrown back. And then Elder Kimball, trying to help, he felt like he couldn't breathe anymore, and there's this distress of, oh my goodness, what's going on? Eventually, a vision is opened to them where they see devils coming, you know, coming, gnashing their teeth, coming at them, and they say that they watched this vision for about an hour of just hell coming after them in some way. Now that vision closes, everybody's fine. The next day they baptize the first eight people there in England, which will eventually lead to the thousands of converts that come from England. There's actually a funny story. The first two brothers, there was a foot race by two brothers to see which one could make it to the River Ribble first to be the first baptism there in England. The younger brother won. But Heber C. Kimball, and I bring all of this up with Nauvoo, because Heber C. Kimball, he writes a letter to Joseph Smith where he says, what is this? Why did we have to experience this vision? That doesn't make any sense. What's going on? And he doesn't get a response. Eventually, Joseph makes it out of Liberty Jail. Heber C. Kimball comes back off his mission. Joseph sees Heber walking, you know, he makes it back to Nauvoo, and they get talking. And Heber, he comes to Joseph and says, Joseph, what's this? I sent you that letter about the demons and whatnot, and you never responded. What do you make of that? And his response was, Heber, when I received your letter, my heart took courage, for I knew the work was about to take flight in me. The closer a man gets to God, the more power will be exerted by the forces of the adversary to stop that. That's paraphrasing. But I have felt that. I used to tell my seminary students that we can kind of think of that as the Satan witness. You think about what happens before the first vision. What happens right before the work takes off in England. What happens just before, you know, all of these doctrines that I listed off that we're going to go through the next week. And Joseph's ability. I mean, it seems to be this case that right before major spiritual progress is about to happen, there is this force exerted by the powers of hell to stop that or to discount that. Well, what experiences have you had with that? If you see demons, don't tell me. They'll give you nightmares. But what did we? It's all right. I don't even know your name.
That's fine. I'm visiting. I'm from here.
Oh, fantastic. I saw that you recognized some people. And I don't know who this famous person is.
I just had a recent experience with a young man that it's so evident that he's being pulled in lots of different directions. Mm-hmm. And it's before he's going to go on a mission. And there's a lot that at play that is just interesting as I'm watching and I'm keep trying because I've kind of had a motherly role in his life, and I just, you know, I can feel it. And he's got some pretty major heritage. Heber C. Kimball, his last name is Kimball. And it is amazing to see, like, what's happening, like, how many things are coming into his life to literally rip him away.
Yeah.
And it's coming, and it's just like the second he said he was going to go. That's when it started, and he's really confused right now, and I keep feeling this sense of urgency to keep contact, to not let go, to keep talking to him, to keep, you know, and it's kind of scary, but at the same time, you think, well, it's because they all know what he'll do, and his ancestors all know what they've done and what will happen, and they're trying to help him, and yeah, it's so interesting. Situation, I'm sure it happens all the time, you know, all around us.
I
wish he could see it, though.
Yeah.
I wish he could see it.
And that's the thing, those of us who were kind of on the outside looking in.
Kind of in a murky fog right now.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that experience. Is there a hand over here? Sorry, that's teacher ESP. You see any movement, you're like, damn. Go ahead.
Well, certainly anyone that's going to join the church, you definitely, mm-hmm. I always kind of give them that warning, mm-hmm. Don't, Satan will ride your back, you know. That time frame before
they're
baptized.
Yeah.
And
after. Yeah, because if you can't get you before, then immediately after it'll try to discount the experience. I baptized a student in December, and, you know, not my first rodeo. I've baptized a few people. But she came to the baptism late. We all thought, is she going to show? And she was just like, I don't know if I can do, just, you could tell. I mean, this was physically stooping her. I mean, she was not herself. And, you know, we talked with her. One of her friends prayed for her. And she's like, okay, yeah, I can do this. I went in the font. And when she came down onto the font, her fog, I mean, this is a weird place to experience this in a baptismal font, right? In a dedicated building. Her fog, I could feel it too. I couldn't remember the sacrament prayer. That's what I meant. The baptism prayer. See, it's happening again.
Things were going really badly.
Yeah. We get her there, start blessing the bread. I couldn't remember the baptism prayer. And so I kind of stumbled. President Woodbury, the mission president, he was there. And he's like, no, this is I'm like, yeah, thank you. And so we said the prayer, and I put her in the water. And when she came out, it was, I mean, talking about sins washed away, I don't know if it was so much like, not a sinful person, this girl, quite pure. But sins in the sense of being, of hell having any power over us, it was washed away. And she comes up out of the water, and she just, big grin on her face, and it gives me a hug, and she's like, I can feel again. That was her comment. I can feel again. Anyway, it was a strong witness to me that yes, just as much as I believe in heaven, there is another side, and I think we would be very unwise to ignore it. So, just something about that. If you have your scriptures, well, yeah, missionary work. Thought you might find that interesting. That's what we send different missionaries to different areas around the world. It's not just England. We're sending missionaries all over the place. Yeah, Orson Hyde and Johnny Page. They get to go to Israel.
You mentioned that earlier, didn't you?
Wow. So when did the Scandinavian countries come in? After 43, apparently.
Yeah, these are just the ones that I put in from... Well, actually, because Joseph Smith, he makes a comment when they announce the building of the temple. He makes some offhand comment about Laplanders, which are Scandinavian people. So, yeah, I don't know when the official missions to Scandinavia go. I'll have to go check that out. Oh, there's Tahiti, Wales.
I was going to say the islands.
Yep. So grab scriptures and go to Doctrine and Covenants, section 142. This is where we're going to spend a lot of our time today. Because this is the earliest revelation that we received from, well, some people could argue, well, polygamy revelation was received as early as the mid-1830s. But as far as just kind of the narrative goes, section 124, this is what we get next. And it's quite... I don't know if I can say this out loud, but it's a little boring. I mean, it's you build this there, this is how you're supposed to do it, you build that there. Not one of my favorite sections, but there are some good things here. Trudy, will you read for us the section heading?
October 27th. Wait, am I?
Yeah,
oh,
that's it.
Sorry. Do you want me to read on the page before that?
Oh, yes, I didn't notice that either.
Okay, it looks a little odd. Okay. Revelation given to Joseph Smith the prophet at Nauvoo, Illinois, January 19th, 1841. Because of increasing persecutions and illegal procedures against them by public officers, the saints had been compelled to leave Missouri. The exterminating order issued by Lilburn Boggs, governor of Missouri, dated October 27th, 1838, had left them no alternative. In 1841, when this revelation was given, the city of Nauvoo, occupying the site of the former village of Commerce, Illinois, had been built up by the saints, and here the headquarters of the church had been established.
Thank you very much. Now, it's interesting, in these first few verses, Joseph Smith receives a rather interesting commandment. Can you pick up for us, Susan?
Sure. Verily, thus saith the Lord unto you, my servant Joseph Smith, I am well pleased with your offering and acknowledgments, which you have made, for unto this end have I raised you up, that I might show forth my wisdom through the weak things of the earth.
And he starts naming some of these weak things, which are world leaders, and then jump down to verse 3.
This proclamation shall be made to all the kings of the world, to the four corners thereof, to the honorable present elect, and the high-minded governors of the nation in which you live, and to all the nations of the earth scattered abroad.
So how'd you like to open up that mission call? Sally Hagelin?
All the nations.
You get to go preach to the presidents and the leaders of nations. Now, I don't know, did you see in your Facebook feed just lately that we had President Obama in Utah, and he met with President Eyring, Elder Christofferson, and Elder Perry.
Yeah, I was there.
Oh, you were there?
Well, I wasn't there.
I was going to say.
Roadblocked.
Oh, you were roadblocked.
I was roadblocked.
Well, when we lived down in Hyde Park, it used to happen to us all the time. So I'm glad I could share the misery with someone else.
Or you.
With someone
not.
Else.
Really well.
What do you think? I mean, preaching gospel to world leaders, good idea, bad idea? What do you think? Would they even listen?
They're just men. They're women too.
Okay. Good idea. They're people too. Aaron?
It's always a good idea, right? Even if it's not accepted. I mean, I'll give you an example. It's not a world leader. There was a mission. There was like the most anti-Mormon congregation, and it's a preacher would just, I mean, to the point where even our mission president was like, could you just go and just like sit in the congregation so he can even just see Mormons because he's so, you know, anti-Mormon. Okay. So anyway, one day we got a referral for Pamela Weaving stuff, and I'm looking at the address and I'm like, what? Can it really be for this preacher? Like, no way, right? And so I go and I knock on the door, and the woman's like, the wife's like, no, you're mistaken, you know. It has his name, maybe it was a joke, you know, it's just like, it's fine. And then he overhears the conversation. No, I didn't order it, you know. I was just a little, you know.
Just curious.
Curious about this. And so we taught him actually about family home evening, right? Like, and so, you know, I don't know how much it changed, but I just think there's some programs or there's things that are so good, and they're good. Like, they're always, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's goodness, and there's always can be even a small change of heart. Not to say our leaders are bitter people or like anti-Mormon, but any little bit that we can share and open any little door is great. Right?
Yeah, because we don't know what that loose brick is.
Whatever it is. Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think too that not just thinking in terms of conversion, but in thinking of terms of education and having them understand what we are not. Mm-hmm. And you can't deny it when you're in your face and you're loving and you're kind and they see your actions and they see what you're doing. Then they hear the other rhetoric and they have something to go off of.
Right.
So it's worth it just for that to say, no, those are good people. I'm not going to buy that. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And they have something to go off of rather than just be like, you know, listening to everything.
My dad just came home from a mission in England. I cannot get my facts right.
Ghana.
Ghana. Yes, thank you, Susan. tell my stories for me. Just came home from a mission to Ghana, and for the most part, so missionary work in Ghana, it's ridiculous. I mean, I went to Germany where I went in the water with two people. You go to. Yeah, that's pretty good for Germany, right? In Ghana, they're baptizing 200 plus a month per Ghanaian mission. I mean, it's ridiculous.
The sacrament meeting that we went to, there were four confirmations.
Oh, at least.
In that sacrament meeting, I mean, just it took up most of the week.
Yeah, we couldn't do anything else because confirmations just took all the time.
Right. Except they didn't have a microphone, so you really couldn't hear. So it was just, that was tough.
But the kids were so reverent.
It was
great.
It
was like, how do this? This is missionary work, it's ridiculous. And my dad, he had to implore, kind of like a little bit of what's going on here, but I think Joseph is being sent for different reasons. But he had to tell his missionaries, look, don't be afraid of the gates. Be afraid of the gates, meaning don't be afraid to go buzz in the gated communities and to go find those who are educated in high positions of power and whatnot. Because at least in Africa, you get a political leader to join. I mean, that's going to be the strength. That's going to be the leadership. not only what that says for everybody else who's going to follow, but that's where the church in these rapidly growing countries is really struggling right now. Because yes, we do want to throw out the gospel net and catch fish of every kind, but we need those who are educated and can lead and can speak well. And we don't have any real evidence that eventually Joseph does make it to Washington, D.C. and to some other areas. We don't have a whole lot of evidence of, you know, just this major leadership that is gathered to the church because of it. But that's the condition of things right now in these new developing centers of the church. Now we have missionaries in we've had missionaries in India for quite a while. Pakistan, we have missionaries in Pakistan now. Jordan has been dedicated to the preaching of the gospel. We don't have full-time missionaries there right now, but there are some others. Some exciting things are happening. So just keep your ears open. You'll probably hit your Facebook feed. But things are definitely happening. Okay, I'll hit some people's Facebook feeds. Some people still have to log in, right?
Once a month.
Let's jump over to, well, I think a lot of this we can just cover by looking at the summary. Verses 1 through 14, we've already talked about. 15 to 21, Hiram Smith, David W. Patton, he's the president. That can't be right. Okay, yeah. I was going to say, David W. Patton, he's dead. Hiram Smith, David W. Patton, Joseph Smith Sr., and others among the living and the dead are blessed for their integrity and virtues. Okay, that makes sense. I was going to say.
This is
what happened to your scriptures.
Yeah, what's going on here? The saints are commanded to build both the house of entertainment of strangers and the temple in Nauvoo. So there's an interesting commandment. Build what eventually will be known as the Nauvoo house, as well as build the temple. And I think we can learn an interesting lesson there. Because our church service, yes, it ought to be about spiritual building of ourselves and our communities and our families. But there's also that temporal aspect to it. Now, often what we want to do, and here's one of these charts. Have I drawn T-charts in this class? Okay, I guess I've only used it in one of the campus classes. But I like to use these charts because, yes, there are things that are important that are temporal, and there are things that are important which are spiritual, so kind of opposite virtues. What can we call, if you push the temporal affairs of our lives, if you push that too far and you only focus on the temporal, what can we call that?
Worldly.
Okay.
Materialism.
Worldly.
Short-sighted.
Materialism. I'm just gonna write so you can't tell if I'm spelling things well or not. Materialism. What is another word?
Short-sighted.
Short-sighted.
Okay.
How about if you push the spiritual too far? What does that look like? What could we call that?
Extreme.
Well, it is an extreme.
Fanatic.
Crazy. Religious
fanatic. Okay. Fanatical.
Extremist.
Yeah. Extremist.
Closed-minded,
right? Yeah, like, okay, oftentimes. Closed-minded. I know, it's getting worse and worse as I go down.
Overzealous.
Probably also short-sighted.
Okay.
For sure.
What do you mean, shorty? Almost pretty shorty.
That works, too. I think anytime you're not seeing the whole picture, you're being short-sighted. No matter where you're looking.
Never mind.
So is that okay that we have very temporal commandments here in the scriptures?
Yes. Everything works together for our good. You've got... We can't be just, like, one little thing. We have to meet our temporal... Everything's spiritual.
Aaron?
I mean, we're spiritual and temporal, right? We have our spirit and our body, and so I think both of those need...
It's really hard to get someone's attention who's hungry. Mm-hmm. But if you feed them and think that they're nourished, that's not good either.
Right.
But it's, I mean, how many people there knows we have mortal bodies, and somebody's starving, needs, or worn out, or emotionally wiped out, needs some going up emotionally, and then spiritually, and fed, and spiritually. I mean, it can be together if it's done right.
Yeah, the body and the spirit that make up the soul of man. It's the spiritual and the temporal that make up the soul.
So that's food for the soul if you put the two of them together.
Yeah, it really is. Now, the Book of Mormon musical, I know you've all seen it. Trudy sings it in her car every day. I haven't seen it, actually. I went and I read the script so that I could self-censor. It needed a lot of self-censoring. But one of the accusations that the musical makes about the church is, oh yeah, you can save the world by taking these naive teenagers, go put them in war-torn countries and say, here, read my book, it'll fix everything. Any missionaries in here, did you ever feel that way? Like,
I think that's interesting.
Go ahead.
That's actually totally opposite from what the Bible says about the church. I mean, you go to some countries and the church is known as the place where you can get food. So it is, you know, just like temples are there, almost to a point where you feel like you're there. But, I mean, anyways, that's not even the true application.
It's not. And in fact, it was funny, my dad, because he was the mission president, and there were so many districts, and a mission president is the ecclesiastical leader for the districts. So if there's not a stake, he's like the stake president for all these districts. And there would oftentimes be people that would come to him, and he received some very odd temporal requests. The oddest one was, can you please refrigerate my dead father for 6 months? Now, in Ghana, funerals are a huge cultural celebration. That is how social status, to some extent, is determined, is based on the size of the funeral that you can throw. Now, if someone dies, and you have the resources to refrigerate that body for months and months and months and months and months and months, you send invitations, you fleece your family, you put up billboards. Do you remember some of them?
What a shock.
What a shock. Prince something has died.
Oh my God.
And they really do like this. They have different color coding too. If it's a white and black coloring, then that's an old person.
Then the death was expected. If it was black and red, it was an unexpected death, and that was a big deal. How you go out matters.
Wow.
Oh wow.
But you're right, they would come. This is the church that has money. And my father said, I mean, he could have made a whole lot of friends by just shelling out money and saying, yeah, come. But it's whenever we push either of these things to an extreme, we get into trouble. And so just be cautious about those things. I mean, you can tell, I probably neglect my temporal welfare a little more than I should. Yeah, I should exercise, that's what I'm trying to say. So. Lindsay's been on it for, and I'm very happy studying my scriptures and reading the words of prophets and trying to pay attention to this aspect. So if I were to grade myself where I'm at, I probably lean a little too far that way.
But is that possible too? Because if you're spending your, I'm not talking about you.
Oh, that's okay.
But if you're spending all this time in your scriptures and doing all this stuff and you're neglecting the health of yourself or the health of your family because you're not helping, because mm-hmm. you're spiritually reading your scriptures and you're kind of neglecting other sides, can it really be spiritually fulfilling? Because, you know, you need to be there for your children mm-hmm. to be healthy.
Yeah.
And if you, you know, so there's, the balance is really important.
Right.
Because I mean,
think we can lie to ourselves and think, oh, I'm doing a good thing.
So therefore, I don't need to do the other.
Right. At least that's the lie I tell myself.
Or you can serve in your callings and neglect your family.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I'm quite happy to go to my early morning Sunday meetings because then Lindsay gets to get all the people to church.
It's
and I don't have to do anything.
And you're justified.
Until Bishop Haglund, we talked about this and said, you know, your counselors can go to those meetings. You don't have to be here every time.
Why?
Why?
So Sarah's dad's gone for me a few times.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't have to get
up. And then Sarah didn't have to get up. So, yeah, but that's been one thing people have loved at the church is, oh, you only worry about the spiritual. There.
I also sometimes feel like the opposite, or it's totally both, but one time I was in Relief Society, and they handed us a checklist of things that we should be doing, right? It was like, and I was already in the mall where I had very young, and I was just like on the brink, and I was sitting between Trudy and Susan, and I just started crying. Like, I was like, the checklist is just, I can't, like, I'm lucky if I can get like two things on this list done right now. And so I think that can happen too. Like, how do you balance that? Like, how do you get done these important things? But so this is exactly the same question. Like, how do you serve the spiritual and the temporal and not feel so overwhelmed by this guy? Our call as members of the church, right?
I've totally been feeling this right now. My mom texted me today, how are you doing? And I was like, I just can't keep up. I can't. I feel like I'm running, like, I'm like, trying to like chase this car and like not let it fall. And I like tried like reaching around and like keep tripping and falling. This anger is very. And I was thinking that like as I'm tripping and falling, the bruised, stronger, but like the rough stone rolling and like the edges are getting chipped off. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're ever supposed to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. Jake mentioned something a couple weeks ago, like, well, BYU possibly wants me for a PhD program, so we could go there next year.
What?
No, like, we're here, like, don't tell me. Anyway, so just all these things that he's like, I'm just, you know, gotta keep you humble, gotta keep you trying to figure things out, which I think the Lord does that. Not me in a mean way, but we have to rely on him a lot more when we don't feel comfortable.
I think sometimes too we mix our checklist with the Lord's checklist. I think sometimes the Lord's checklist is a lot simpler than ours. He says we have to be all of these things that I've heard he ought to be doing. I think the Lord's checklist is, are you being a good mom and are you being a good wife? Are you being a good friend? Are you, what kind of person are you being, rather than a checklist? And I think I love checklists. I'm kind of like one of those people that's like, whew, yes, I love that little mark.
Checklist.
Yep. Yep. But the less I put on my checklist, the more spiritually grounded I feel.
I didn't catch your name.
Aletha.
I just keep pointing at you. Aletha, go ahead.
No, I remember one time my husband was called to be a temple worker, and then I found out that I couldn't be a temple worker because I was a mom. Because if you have young children at home, you can't be a temple worker. And so I was really indignant about it, to be honest, and I was like, well, that's got to change, blah, blah, blah. But what changed in me was my perspective, was that Heavenly Father was not expecting me to be there because he knew that I had a pretty big job already. And he really wanted me to honor that job. And he honored it. And it changed everything. I didn't feel slighted. I felt like, I need to take this more seriously and really honor that and stop feeling put upon and left out and really see it the way he sees it. And it really did help me a lot to kind of go through that process. And so perspective, he doesn't expect us to do everything all the time, but he knows exactly what you're doing. So when you're a young mom with all those demands, he doesn't expect the same. You know, it changes. And so we shouldn't always look at one checklist for new and new. It's different.
Susan.
I think for me, I've just learned to be, or I'm trying to be, just really honest with myself and with the Lord. What are you really doing? And what does the Lord really expect of you? And just be totally honest and none of this, you know, I'm so in my mind that I'm a good person and this is all I need to be and studying my scriptures, that's all that I need to be and not care about. You know, just like total honesty. What are you really doing? What are you really engaged in? How are you really spending your time? What does the Lord
really expect of you. And just cut with it.
Yes.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Especially in,
it's hard to let go.
You know, in church congregations where we can be so in each other's business. Or we just think, you know, I have to do this like that person, I have to do this like that person. It'll wear you out.
Yeah.
Wear me out.
Culture, I think the Mormon culture, or maybe any community culture you have, can figure into this checklist, and it's not really relevant. The cultural part of it.
So what is relevant? What should we focus on? We know a lot of stuff we want to avoid. How do we keep ourselves, you know, Aristotle, virtue lies at the mean of extremes. How do we keep ourselves there? Taryn.
I like Joseph's explanation, which is simply being honest with yourself and with the Lord and where you are now.
Okay, easy to say. What does that actually look like?
I don't know. Like, I just found that if I'm really doing, not necessarily reading my scriptures all the time and every moment, but if I'm sincere in my prayers, that even when I think he's not listening, like, small example. On Sunday, I was thinking, I don't feel close to Joseph Smith, right? So I say a prayer. Like, I'm really not feeling close. I don't understand, you know. And then what is our lesson on, right? It's on Joseph Smith. And I was like, oh. It was like a prayer. If I hadn't, you know what I mean? Like, it was like, somehow I was inspired to know what I was going to need, but, and then it was later provided. I mean, that's usually not that quick. But I think it really, there has to be something to keeping that sincere communication open with the Lord. And there's times where you feel like the door, the windows are closed and you're not hearing him and he's not hearing you. Mm-hmm. And that's when life gets hard for me, right? Is when I'm no longer feeling that direct communication the way as immediate as I would like.
Aaron, have you ever had Mormonism get in the way of God? What does that look like? I mean, you don't have to get too specific.
I think that I mean, when I think Mormonism, I guess I think of the culture of Mormon. Is that what you're referring to? Mm-hmm. But, you know, if I let the culture or the what I feel like a Mormon mom is supposed to be able to do.
And the blogs are helping, right?
Yes.
Yeah, the blogs, they help.
Oh my goodness. Pinterest is like my, I love and hate that. and like my husband will say, you know, like, it doesn't have to be perfect. You know, like, she did it perfect out there, and I just want to make my birthday party as cool as her birthday party was for her kid.
Do you know about Pinterest fails?
No, but I'm totally going to look that up.
It's so great.
I can pose several. So, but I mean, I don't know where I'm going with it, but I got
sidetracked. Oh, that's fine. And it is interesting. I can remember going to one class, and I don't know where this idea came from. But I just made a list on the board, and I put Christians. I said, what makes a good Christian? And the class listed off, you know, they pray, they're kind, they're, you know, just good Christian qualities. What makes a good Mormon? You keep the word of wisdom, you do your home teaching, you duh, 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 duh. And I said, which one would you rather be? Now, we don't want to go too far and just be like, Mormon culture's the worst. Ellie's checklist is the things we're supposed to do. Because remember, what's the other, I mean, section 124 is the Lord telling these Nauvoo saints, I want you to build this, and I want you to build this, and it needs to be in this way, and I want you to do that. So, let's try to get behind why visiting teaching? Why youth callings that are extremely demanding? Why some of the more line item types of things?
What isn't is I have to go there, I have to give a message, and then I have to call and record it. If you don't have a relationship with that person or making an effort, forget about the 30 days and the message you do the best you can to get that, but that's not the point. So that's where the two get mixed up. Everyone's gotten a phone call, oh, I need to come see you. I need to come see you. Like, well, it's not convenient for me, by the way, but I'll accommodate you so you can check off your list. Yeah. But I really don't want you here right now. And that's, you know, that's the difference between the Christianity and the world. Like, when we forget, and it's like, have I worked, have I reached out so hard that that person knows that when they really need it, they're going to call me. That's my, you know, my checklist to say, have I gotten that far? What else do I need to do so that person can say, I would call her in that time when, you know, I might be embarrassed to call somebody who just shows up at the end of the month to do their thing. That's the difference to me.
Thank you for sharing. Go ahead.
I think it's also the checklist sometimes helps us get set. Like when you're first visiting teaching, you might not, you just know because you're going because you're like, this is what I'm supposed to do, and I'm going to do this because this is what I'm supposed to do, and then you have these moments of conversion, like something that's happened that makes you realize, wow, I'm gaining a testimony of this checklist. And so I guess the checklists are there in place to remind us of things that we should, you know, be considering and doing, but when the conversion happens and the checklist is no longer really a necessity, it's more of a, I'm doing this because I've been converted in my heart.
Oh, virtue lies with the mean and extremes. I can remember being in a meeting with one of the leadership of seminaries and institutes, and he had some question. I can't remember some policy issue. And so he went to Elder Paul Johnson, member of the 70, who was the commissioner of church education. And he had, you know, this idea for some things, and so he presents an idea, and I can't remember the specifics, but I do remember what he said Elder Johnson's response was. He says, Chad, that's my boss's name, Chad, do you want the law of Moses, or can you and the Lord figure this one out? And he just felt so rebuked, like, oh, yeah, okay, sorry. I get it. But again, you know, kind of like you said, Aaron, that law of Moses was hopefully to point the children of Israel towards something. And I wonder if a lot of these line item types of things, they are to help us get in the, to prepare our hearts and our minds in such a way that those really kind of transcendent relationships matter experiences can happen. Rachel.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I feel like sometimes the ones of us that are really, you know, love the skills and love the checklist. You know, but I've got a sister who is just, she's a lot more able to do things and try to get right. So I like those goals, smart goals, you know, like,
yeah.
Do this way, do this way.
Oh, they drive me nuts.
You know, and I think that, you know, and so I think we have to know who we are as well. We need, like, this checklist is helpful for maybe the person that gave us the lesson, you know, or maybe, you know, but for the people that are able to kind of get the big picture and just jump out there on the list and you know, just do it, that's great, but for me, that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know?
Good point. My father was in the General Sunday School presidency during the transition from President Hinckley to President Monson. Both prophets, right? Very different leadership styles. President Hinckley was very efficient and agendas, and everyone was at the meeting 15 minutes early, and once everybody got there, we started, and he just got a ton done. My father, that's kind of his style. He appreciated that, and he loved going to those meetings. President Monson takes over, still effective, but everybody's there 15 minutes early. And President Monson spends the next 15 minutes just, how's your aunt? And for my dad, he was like, come on, let's get stuff done.
Down to business.
And it would even be, the meeting was supposed to start, and President Monson would still be talking to people about relationships. Who's right? Well, I think that is. We can take either. There's a reason that both of these are virtues. We don't want to push any of them to extremes, but let's say that somebody might be here or somebody might be here. As long as they're not way off, hopefully the church is big enough and our hearts are big enough to recognize. All right, Sarah, you like lists? I don't. So you take care of that kind of stuff, and I'll take care of what I'm good at. And to be able to recognize, you know, just like it talks about in 1 Corinthians 12, the eye cannot say to the foot, I have no need of thee. You know? Or that the whole body would be seeing. Hopefully we can glory in this. There's a phrase in the Catholic Church where they talk about unity and diversity, and diversity and unity. I know it's Catholic, so it's a paradox, but you can just sit there and think about that. It's one of those ideas that I really like. And maybe we could learn something from it. Have a little more unity and diversity. And diversity and unity.
I think that's part of the Lord's plan, right? Like, we're supposed to be one, but yet, like you said, we transition leadership. We consistently transition bishops and, you know, like every other position within the church. And I think part of that is to say, hey, you're not the only one that's right.
Yep.
Get over you, get over your way, recognize. That was the big thing, like becoming a parent for the first time with someone who's raised in a different home. Like, that was the best thing I ever learned. My way is not the only right way. But I think that there's a lot more leeway within the Lord's plan than we sometimes think in our heads or give ourselves room to believe.
Yeah, thank you. And that's a lot of what section 124 is about, is the Lord tells, he gives people very specific assignments. But then he says, this is the only way you're going to accomplish it. Here's what I want you to do. You better be humble and teachable how to do it. And he just has this, I find section 124 to be one of my favorite real practicums in, here's how to navigate this. I mean, because we do. We have our checklisty types of things, but they're supposed to be practiced through these virtues, through prayer, through faith, through long-suffering, you know, through all of those fruits of the Spirit, those bigger idea concepts.
But, you know, Karina and I were just talking about this morning. In the end, if you don't have charity, you have nothing.
Exactly.
That is the whole end goal. So some of us are going to get it to it one way and some another, but if that is not the goal, charity, getting a phone call at the last minute to come see me so you can help, I'm not sure that that's it. Yeah, they're trying to be obedient, and that's why I say yes, because they're trying. So that's my part, to be humble enough to say, all right, you know, like, they're trying.
Yeah.
They're doing what they can do right now. But, you know, in the end, that's where we're supposed to get to.
How would that be? You know, the bishop is up there judging who's acting out of real intent and who's not.
Nightmare. Dangerous. Very dangerous. But we do that to each other, though.
So oh, we do.
100% of this, and you did 100% of that. You're a rock star.
Let's see. So we talked about those two houses. Let's talk about. Let's do this. Because I think this is what we're trying to get to. So the city of our God comes from Psalm 48. Great is the Lord and greatly to be praised in the city of our God in the mountain of his holiness. Beautiful for situation. The joy of the whole earth is Mount Zion. On the sides of the north, the city of the great king. Nauvoo kind of... I think Joseph is trying to get to the city of our God idea, where he renames it, you know, city beautiful, or it signifies a beautiful situation. But actually, there's some things in Nauvoo that keep paralleling Psalm 48. God is known in her places for a refuge, for lo, the kings were assembled, they passed by together. They saw it, and so they marveled, and they were troubled, and hastened away. Here in section 124, verse 10, where shall be the safety of my people, and shall be a refuge for those who have fled? Awake, O kings of the earth, come, O ye, with your gold and your silver to the help of my people, to the house of the daughters of Zion. Psalm 48:8, as we have heard, so have we seen, in the city of the Lord of hosts, in the city of our God, God will establish it forever. We have thought of thy loving kindness, O God, in the midst of thy temple. Walk about Zion and go round about her. Tell the towers thereof. Mark ye well her bulwarks. Consider her palaces, that ye may tell it to the generation following. And I think this is one of the important things, is when we talk about Nauvoo, and maybe we take our reluctant children on these Nauvoo excursions, and we say, hey, look at this old house. And if you were like me, I just want to tell my mom, look, if you show me one more quaint house, that was my mom's issue. Look how quaint this. I don't want to see any more quaint houses, Mom. Mm-hmm. But one thing I did appreciate was when my parents started to explain to me why Nauvoo was so important to these people, that for years they'd just been kind of kicked around in Missouri. What had happened to Joseph Smith before he showed up? When I understood, you know, how it was a tower and a bulwark and a real place of refuge, that's when it started to matter a bit. Here's President Hinckley. This is young President Hinckley, Elder Hinckley, 64 General Conference. As an imagination, I saw my own grandfather, a young man who had been orphaned by a plague of smallpox with his brother and grandparents. He had gone to Springfield, Illinois, Abraham Lincoln's town, and then on to Nauvoo. There as a boy, he met Joseph Smith, the man who changed his life and the lives of all the generations to follow him. He witnessed in Nauvoo the resurgence of the old, ugly hatred culminating in the murder of the prophet Joseph Smith. He saw Nauvoo threatened, then attacked, burned, and emptied of those who owned it. He, with his young bride, started across Iowa, then followed the long trail up the Elkhorn to North Platte in the direction of Fort Laramie. His wife grew pale and sick and died. With his own hands, he chopped a tree beside the trail, made a coffin, dug a grave, left his sweetheart in a place he never again visited, and carried a three-month-old baby to the Salt Lake Valley. I thought of him last night as we flew smoothly more than 7 miles over the Brat. More than 7 miles?
That's probably
a long flight.
Yeah.
More than 7 miles over Nebraska and Wyoming, and reached in my case, took out my Bible and turned to Joshua chapter 24 and read these words of the Lord given to an ungrateful Israel. And I have given you a land for which ye did not labor, and cities for which ye did not, which ye built not, and ye dwell in them, of the vineyards and the olive yards which ye planted, not do ye eat. I thought of how appropriately that might be applied to our generation. You and I live in a marvelous land for which we have not labored, and we dwell in cities which we have built not, and eat of vineyards which we have not planted. How thankful we ought to be for the magnificent blessings we enjoy. Our society is afflicted by a spirit of thoughtless arrogance, unbecoming those who have been blessed so generously. There is something to knowing our history, so that I think we can reflect, and it can help us to remain humble. We had a situation in our house yesterday where I went to go pick up Seth, our oldest son, from play rehearsal. And when you see the director walking outside with your son before your car, you know something's not quite right. And Lindsay and I have noticed over the past couple of weeks that Seth, his heart's been a little hard, hasn't been very kind to his brothers and sisters. Just very entitled, very, I deserve this, I should be allowed to do this, whatever. And unfortunately, that spilled over to rehearsal where one of the other adults approached him and wanted him to do something. And he denies it, so we're still trying to get to the bottom of the story. But he looked at an adult and he said, "Who are you that I should have to do what you tell me?" And then he said something inappropriate to the director, which caused her awkward conversation with me after rehearsal last night. And I wonder, what can Lindsay and I do to better help him understand where he comes from? Because he does. He has it really, really good. I don't know, should we go move back into the city so things aren't so easy? No. Erin, go ahead.
I was reading actually a New York Times article about this a year ago, and it totally changed my outlook. It was just saying how telling your family history is what builds this resiliency and builds this abilities often in your kids. It's simply, and not just the Mormon Pioneer, which is awesome, but like, you know, my dad was a sharecropper, you know what I mean? Like what is it, their failures, what are their successes? I stuff as fabulous about how utilizing these stories to help you see, I guess, the world a little differently for your own family's
stuff.
So, to some degree, I mean, I think some kids need more than it.
Absolutely.
You know, having lived and been in the Hyde Park Ward too, I mean, when you see a lot of that too, you know, and you enter these homes that are so, you know, impoverished families, and drug dealers are next door and stuff. And so I think
I met a hitman.
Oh yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Glad you weren't the target.
I see. Doesn't teach somebody that. No. Yeah, I think that the stories are great. I'm really a visual person, learner, and so I think there that would be a piece of other things you could do. But it is a sickness in our society, and I blame a lot of it on technology because it creates this feeling of anonymity. I can text at the dinner table somebody, I mean, if you allow that, I'm sure none of us do allow that, but it's just, it is a different world, and I think it'd be fun to brainstorm as members of the church, just how, what are some other ideas, you know, to add to Aaron's thought? Because I think that a lot of kids have that absolutely same opinion, same view of the world.
I saw one thing, so I went to an early morning seminary class at a couple's home, and their placemats were pedigree charts. I asked them, I said, well, what's this about? Said, oh, well, I just want my kids to know who their grandparents, their great-grandparents, their great-great-grandparents are. So I said, well, what would we talk about these people? They know them. They're like, they know their aunts and uncles. They know that great-great-grandpa, whoever it was, I can't remember his name, that he's the one that emigrated to the United States. And they do. They talk about these stories because it's literally right in front of them.
I was gonna say, it just I think another thing here is that in our generation, there's so much that we get without having to work for it. I mean, technology is part of that. I want to know something, I ask Siri, and she tells me. Like, how hard is that? And
now
I
know the Holy Ghost's name.
Exactly. I always wonder. But I think there is something to that, that there's this expectation of immediate gratification, and I can get what I want, and I can get it now. And I remember a talk several years ago, I think he was a bishop, it was General Conference, I think he was a member of the bishopric, and he said, tell your kids no. He said, that's one of the most important things that we can do for our kids, even if you can afford it, tell them no. You know, help them learn to appreciate and learn to
do without
and learn to yeah.
I don't know. That sounds more. Well, that's what we're saying, right? We need to tell our kids no. We also need to teach them again.
What's the intent of saying no?
Right. It's not just to be mean.
Or just to have power over.
Right.
Or to exercise dominion. It's to help them. Mm-hmm. So it has to be the right intent. And that's what's there, you know, knowing what you're doing has a purpose, and they'll feel that.
Yeah. The church education coordinator down in Kansas, the wonderful man, his name is Sterling Knapp, he's the state president down there, and we were having a very similar conversation, and he's convinced that the purpose of everything in the church, if I can spell right. is to help us become sanctified. Which only happens as we espouse that virtue of charity. Because charity is something that cannot be faked. You take charity and you push that to an extreme.
It demands sacrifice.
It does.
Suffering.
It's, you can't, I mean, think about, you know, someone who you feel embodies charity. And a neighbor virtue is going to be that person's authentic. It's not something that can be faked. Because there is, I mean, those people that try, I don't know, I don't like those interactions. They just feel, they make me anxious. And maybe you know people like that, maybe you know. But, you know, why are we doing this? Why is the Lord asking them to build a Nauvoo house in a temple, in a mill, and a this, and a that, and the other? Sure, there are temporal needs to be taken care of, but at the same time, they're also learning significant spiritual lessons as they're going through. I have to take care of my 5 kids, and I'm sure learning a whole lot about the plan of salvation while I do it. And I'm grateful for this practicum the Lord has given us, and not just say, yeah, I mean, once you figure it all out in your head, then you'll be able to do everything right. Now, there's a lot to bumping and banging and bumping away. And I'm very grateful to the Lord who has sacrificed his life so that my mistakes are not final. There are two tories. And so let's take it easy on ourselves. You know, when we do mess up, realize that there's a Savior that sacrificed and it's not final. But also to get right back in the saddle. I'm mixing so many metaphors, it's horrible. But to get right back in the saddle and just keep at it. Realizing sometimes life will feel here, sometimes life will feel over here. But please avoid those extremes as best as we can. And, you know, be patient with one another as we see it. Because one thing I've seen is, you know, the adversary, he sends counterfeits and pairs of opposites. And so let's say, you know, Rachel's a little more task-oriented than I am. Well, we can talk about Lindsay anymore. You'd swear we never should have gotten married. Lindsay wondered sometimes. We thought we had so much in common until we lived together. And I'm all up here, and she actually does stuff. And it's hard, but that's what we've had to learn. Is it's not better or worse, it's just different.
Equal opposite.
Really? Hopefully it's equal. I think she puts in more than I do.
She probably does.
It's really good.
Yeah, right.
No,
but I'm so grateful that I can learn from her, and hopefully she learns something from me. And the saints, they all have to have learn something from each other. That's what you find in 124. Go ahead, Sally.
This has been so helpful to me today. I have a friend who goes to church about 4 or 5 days a week. She was Catholic. Her husband was dying. She asked her whole family to come and pray for her. They're like, no, we need the pastor, the priest to come. And so she's explored church, lots of churches for many, many years. But I really truthfully felt intimidated. I mean, I kind of felt like, I do go to church 5 days a week. I do.
She's so much older than
the temple. But, I mean, she's not. We're about the same age. But I feel like the balance is what the lessons helped me today a lot. Think about the balance. She's just a wonderful, amazing person. But I have felt like I absolutely tried to talk to her about the church with, you know, she's been in my home, we've done a lot of stuff, but it's just been really, because she's being fed other stuff. I just know she is, for sure.
Well, here's something Catholic you can share with her.
Well, she's not Catholic anymore.
Oh. Okay, well, here's something
she became disillusioned.
Christian that you can, anyway. We're familiar with that cross. You've probably also seen this cross as well. This one is referred to as the Bishop's Cross. And the purpose of the Bishop's Cross was to remind the church to maintain balance in all things. Mm-hmm. That's why it's not elongated on one side. Mm-hmm. You can go Google or Wikipedia the Bishop's Cross. There's some new lessons to be learned about that. But I bear testimony, I'm grateful for a gospel that helps me try to avoid those extremes. And hopefully just because I like one extreme more than the other, I don't vilify the other, and I don't over-promote whatever it is that I like. And I see the gospel, and especially temporal communal settings like this to come together and see, Mary Dunn does life different than I do, and that's okay. And as long as we can agree about the first principles and ordinances of the gospel, the doctrines, everything else, I hope we can just take a collective step back and say, it's different. It's not valid. So, thankful for this conversation today. It's helped me figure out some things. Thank you for being willing to participate. But I know God is good and has a plan for us to figure things out. And that plan will be both temporal and spiritual. So look for lessons that are already found. I'll share that with you.
Amen.
Will you pray for us, Doug?
Sure.
Is that okay?
Father, we're very grateful to come together this afternoon, this morning, to discuss these important lessons. We're so grateful to Brother Jed for his preparation and knowledge and the spirit that he brings to this subject matter. We pray that each of us will look for and find better balance in our lives and be confident in who we are and what we do, and what our needs are. We're grateful today for our many blessings. We're so thankful to have the scriptures to look to and to learn from, and we're thankful for our families and for our friendships and for our association with one another, and we appreciate this time together. I say this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. If anybody's upset that we didn't go through the this person built that and this person built that and that.
You gave a quote last week from C.S. Lewis. It was kind of about balance.
I think it's
what? The exact quote?
You can give me the exact quote or just some keywords so I can look it up for you.
Oh,
I can Google it.
I mean,
of course I am. I'm so excited.
So I was able to get the complete works of C.S. Lewis on my phone.
Wow.
But
that's a lot.
It is. You couldn't buy it in the United States, so I gave myself a state England.
I have read. You just made it up.
Yeah.
Well, Shire Bay.
I picked Hyde Park something.
Oh.
I used to live in Hyde Park.
I know a lot of people in Utah.
I'm sure I could just Google it and it would be just as fast.
Do you read a lot of C.S. Lewis?
Everything he's ever written. Well, almost.
I'm going to be saying that. I'm going to be saying that.